Welcome to the Fundraising Leadership Podcast, where we engage in lively and thoughtful conversations with professionals in the nonprofit world. I am Margaret Katz-Kann, and I'm joined today by my teammate, Michelle Malloy-Dillon.
Hey, Margaret. How you doing?
I'm great. How about
you? Good to be here with you. We've got a great guest today. Jennifer Steele is joining us. She is the CEO of Meals on Wheels of Southwest Ohio and Northern Kentucky, which is one of the largest Meals on Wheels organizations in the country. And Jennifer has a philosophy that really includes a holistic view of community to develop a transformational services and fundraising strategies. She's really remained faithful to the history of her organization's goals. And she's got more than 20 years of experience in the nonprofit and human services sectors. And just to be transparent, Fundraising Leadership is currently doing a lot of leadership development work with Meals on Wheels in Southwestern Ohio and Northern Kentucky, and Jennifer and her leadership team. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Jennifer wrote a totally great blog, which everybody should read. And it really, it takes a really interesting and challenging look at philanthropy. I'd love to start though, Jennifer, just, and you talk about this in your blog, the moment that you got the call from Mackenzie Scott's team that life at Meals on Wheels was about to look very different for you. What happened to you from there in that moment?
It was, first I thought it was a scam.
Which would be anybody's reaction, probably.
I really did. We were in the first big round of giving. So she had given in the summer before to some historically Black universities and colleges, but it was kind of quiet. I remembered seeing an article about it, but it wasn't top of mind. People weren't talking about Mackenzie Scott as a household name then. So I got an email from her team, which is a professional group that works with philanthropists and nonprofits. And they asked if I could be on a confidential phone call, and that there was an anonymous donor who'd like to make a guest to our organization. So of course I made myself available, but was also a little skeptical. And on the call, they informed us that we were going to be receiving a very large gift, $4 million, which at the time our organization's operating budget was $4.6 million. We've since grown a lot, but the trust that was communicated on that call, they said, "You're the experts. We want you to use this money where it's most needed. You can talk about this however you like to talk about it or not." they shared a little bit about the donor's intent. And then said they just wanted to make it about us and the people we serve. And it was such I've never had a call like that, which says a lot. I've been doing this for 20 years, where I just was being told I was being completely trusted with this gift from someone that I had never met, that I didn't know had been doing a lot of really rigorous due diligence behind the scenes. And it was so powerful and transformational in its own way, just that feeling that I had of being trusted and respected and able to carry out this donor's wishes without a lot of rules and red tape and reporting and oversight. It was just really freeing, and I cried, and I just couldn't quite get my head around it for a while. What we've been able to do with some of that and the flexibility it's afforded us as this kind of pandemic has gone on and we've entered into a new set of crises has been a game changer.
You know, you wrote this blog that you titled The Alchemy of Trust-Based Philanthropy. And, you know, when you speak about receiving this gift from Mackenzie Scott and the transformation that happened for you personally in feeling that there was this trust in you and your organization to really make good with this huge gift. Can you speak more about like what became available to you from a transformational perspective with that trust?
Yeah, I'll just say, you know, personally, it's been interesting for me to think about this, how driven and determined I am to make sure I don't let her down in the absence of any real accountability in that sense. You know, I mean, I think the tendency is for funders or donors to think that an increased level of scrutiny or reporting or accountability is going to increase the response from the nonprofit and the level of, you know, of impact that they're going to make. And I found it to be the opposite. I found that the fact that she's given this trust so freely after having done a lot of due diligence and she was very responsible, obviously, in her selection process, but just knowing that she's trusted us so much has made me want to do everything within my power to use it for the most transformational activities that we possibly can and to do the most we can with it. So it's certainly increased for me, you know, this kind of fire to make sure that I'm really using every penny of that money to its fullest extent. And so the flexibility that has come with that and the freedom that's come with that has enabled us to, I hate the word pivot anymore because I feel like it's been so overused during the pandemic, but the pivot, you know, where, okay, we know broadly what we want to use this funding for. It's for innovation. It's for transformation in the programs and services we provide for seniors. We want to use it to be a local test market for national change and innovation and things that can be scaled and replicated. But we've been able to be really responsive to the needs of our local community within that because we didn't have to say at the beginning, these are the outcomes that we're going to achieve. Because once you say that, that's what you have to follow through with, and that's what you have to report on, and that's what you have to achieve, even if something else has come up that's more critical and more urgent or where you're going to have a greater impact. So I think just the ability to be nimble and adapt, especially in this climate where things are still changing every day in the world, to be able to be truly responsive to the needs of our local community with an eye to what we need to do for seniors as a country has been a real gift. I mean, aside from the financial gift, just the knowing we can do the right thing, do what we need to do, we have the freedom to do it, has been life-changing.
Yeah. So it sounds almost like one of the things that felt transformational about this was you didn't have to promise outcomes. You got to actually design and maybe continue to design what the outcomes should be, that it got to be a dynamic process. So what do you think is important about that? Because it's so rare.
It is so rare. And I think what's going to happen is when we get to, you know, see some of the results, and I don't know what that's going to look like, right? Because the reporting is so unconventional. It's not like, I didn't have to fill out a lengthy report. I don't know how it's all going to be aggregated, but I think we're going to be able to show an impact that is going to exceed anything that we would have been able to have achieved had we been following the traditional model of determining the desired outcome, following the steps, getting to that reporting on that thing. And it's hard to even articulate because it's never happened before, right? Like you don't just get a multi-million-dollar gift typically as a nonprofit without having to say, this is exactly how we're going to spend it. And these are the things we think we're going to achieve. What we think we're going to achieve is maximum impact. What that looks like is totally up to us. And that's what I love about it. I love that we can just kind of wade into this in the midst of this crisis where every day brings something new and there's uncertainty and we can be strategic about our goals, but that we're not tied to specific metrics and hitting certain milestones to be able to show that we were successful. And I think that just has allowed for so much creativity and the potential for true innovation that that really is going to result in that kind of transformational impact that I think donors are looking for and nonprofits are looking for, but we've never really been able to get to because we haven't trusted each other enough to take that leap. I mean, it really feels like Mackenzie Scott and I just like joined hands and like jumped off a cliff together.
You're speaking so...
And I never met her, but that's what it feels like.
Yeah, it's so empowering to hear you speak about the impact of really truly feeling as if you're really trusted and having all the freedom. And it makes me curious, like, how do we know when trust is really there? Like, you know, is in this instance, is sort of the definition of trust changing from what are the metrics? How are we going to know it's going to be done to something that's more of a way of being in relationship to something or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like, Michelle, like the first thing that you're describing is more almost like accountability, you know?
Yeah.
When you come forward and you say, we're going to do these things and then you do them, that's accountability. And I love what you're asking because it's like, Trust never fit in there before. Like, how does it fit in?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been fascinating for me to think about that and to experience it even because I think that maybe we've been operating under this assumption in the sector at large, right? That accountability equals trust or accountability leads trust, and that's how trust is built, or that's how trust is maybe compelled, which is even a little scarier to think about because I think that that tells us a lot about the absence of it that we've had in our relationships historically. Like, you can't compel trust, right? I mean, you can compel accountability to an extent, but you can't force trust. And so the way Mackenzie Scott has gone about this is so different even than how a lot of large donors have approached philanthropy to begin with, where there was no relationship at all. You know, if you think about the traditional donor pyramid approach to fundraising, it's, you know, the donor comes in at a certain level, there's presumably a relationship that's built, and then they get to the point where they make a very meaningful, very impactful gift over time. Mackenzie Scott totally flipped that. And she chose nonprofits that she had no relationship with. And she gave very large initial one-time, presumably gifts, and gave them in complete faith and trust because she had done her homework, basically.
Yeah, I was going to point out. Yeah, it's not like it was blind trust.
There had been a lot of homework. And what I love what she said about it, and I'm just paraphrasing here, basically, but because her process was data-driven and rigorous in selection, they could be human and soft in the giving and in the rest of the relationship. And it's certainly a relationship, even though she's not this longtime donor or someone that I've met personally. I know what she wants. I know what she doesn't want. I'm highly motivated to come through on that. She's highly motivated to see the impact and success that we're going to have, but she's not going to dictate the terms because she trusts us. Mm-hmm. And she trusts us because she did her homework. She vetted our leadership team. She looked at our financial statements. She knew we could handle this gift and that we were in a position of readiness to do something with it and had already shown that we could make an impact. So I think that's a really interesting way to look at trust, because I think there's also an assumption that you build trust slowly over time through these many, many interactions. And it doesn't have to be that way, right? It doesn't have to be the case. That's one way to do it, certainly, and one's not better than the other. But I think it's fascinating that she's been willing to take that leap with organizations, and that other donors might be looking at how she's done things as a potential different new way of working with nonprofits.
Yeah. Jennifer, it inspired you to write this blog using the metaphor of alchemy, which historically, as I learned in a very beautiful, succinct way from your blog, was the attempts to take base metals and turn them into something precious, which chemically is not a thing, but the metaphor still exists.
It's so lovely, isn't it?
I know, I love it. I know, the Sorcerer's Stone, us having Harry Potter images when I was, reading.
Right.
Yeah, but I am curious. I mean, there's something about this trust that's part of this magical, and it's not magical as in it doesn't exist. It's magical in terms of impact. But tell us, like, what else goes into alchemy as it applies to thinking about philanthropy and taking something base and making it, spectacular and precious?
Yeah, I think so much of the focus when we're talking about trust-based philanthropy has been on the focus has been on the donor and the things the donor needs to do, right? That foundations need to build more trusting relationships. They need to stop asking for so many detailed reports. They need to remove some of the burdens on the nonprofit. I mean, that's been really the focus on balancing that power dynamic, right? Like the idea is nonprofits want to create this magic. We want to transform communities. So do the foundations. If only the foundations could stop making things so hard for us. And I appreciate that. and only the donors could stop, could trust us enough to just give freely and let us do what we need to do. But there's a lot of work we need to do on ourselves in the nonprofit sector to really make that possible. And what I think really resonates with me about the alchemy metaphor is that the alchemist's intentions have to be pure for the transformation to happen. So if as fundraisers and as nonprofit leaders and board members, we're not really focused on transformational impact and change and building trust and coming to these relationships with donors in a really authentic, transparent way ourselves, we won't get there. We can't ask for all the change and transformation to be on the part of the donors. We have to do that too. We have to do that work ourselves. Because if we're just asking for a gift for the sake of getting a gift or to make sure that we achieve our budget or our goals, then we're not really going to create that magic and that transformational impact that we all want. So I think, we have to look within too as nonprofits.
There's a great quote in your blog, and I'm just going to read it because it's so succinctly summarizes what you're saying in such a brilliant way. What we're missing when we seek transformation but focus nearly exclusively on transactions and data points that measure them is the change that must occur within the actual human hearts involved. Yeah. And, what you're pointing to is this, like, this is a relationship between
it is
all of the people involved. It's not just a transaction.
It no, it's not. It's a relationship. It's a journey. It's always humans involved in all of it. First, it's donors who want to do something really meaningful and powerful with their resources, and nonprofits who want to do the same thing. And we have to get to know each other in that way, even if that means over a long period of time, where it might take a slower build to get to that point, or if it's just a gift that comes out of the blue like this, where we get to fast track that. It's still at the end of the day, often comes down to two people, right? It's a fundraiser and it's a donor. And it's making sure we're keeping that at the center of everything we do. We can't spreadsheet that to death, and we can't.
And you can't build trust, no, like without
we can't
this.
KPI. We can't KPI trust.
No, like
we can't. And we want to be able to, because that's how we have been conditioned and trained, that we show results and that we show our value. And I think sometimes even our worth, which is, I think, potentially really damaging to the building of that trust, that it's about so much more than those numbers. It's about so much more than the actual gift even.
Yeah. And I know at the heart of your work is getting food to people who, right, it's working in the world of food insecurity and seniors and things like that. And that's an easy thing to turn into a metric, right? Number of meals delivered or things like that. And so what creativity has this inspired in you to think about bigger pictures or how change happens?
Yeah. I mean, and I would even say, you know, numbers of meals and numbers of people served are still, at the end of the day, they're outputs, right? They're not really impacts and outcomes. I mean, there's some of that inherent in that, you know, if you provided a meal to someone, you've made an impact, right? But how are we really going to ensure that that is something that's here for seniors for the long term, that we're actually meeting their needs? Are we addressing loneliness and social isolation? Really, you know, are we really making a dent in hunger, in malnourishment? How can we try completely new ways of tackling those problems and show that they work and that they should be adopted by others? That takes an entirely different way of measuring success. And some of what we've had to do even internally is just keep reminding people of that, that we can't measure trying completely new things the old way. So we're figuring some of that out as we go. You know, some of it involves really qualitative types of information, like just sitting down with people and listening to them tell the story of the impact that maybe a new approach to shared housing has made in their life, how they feel less alone. We've engaged market researchers in some of our outcomes measurement, which we've never done before because we haven't really looked at the seniors who receive services as consumers with choices, and looked at some of the programs that exist for them in that light and tried to figure out, maybe there's something better. Maybe there's a totally different way of meeting these needs today. And not being afraid to try those things because we don't know exactly how to show that we've been successful in a traditional sense. And we can do that because we don't have to show that we've been successful in a traditional sense. If we had been told by Mackenzie Scott's team, You use this funding the way you need to, but report to us in exactly this prescribed format and show that you've achieved these results, it would have tied our hands and we wouldn't have been able to even try some of the things that we've been trying. So it's so revolutionary that it's hard to even describe.
And I know trust has been, you know, a big theme of yours in the past year or so. And, you know, for your organization and even your leadership team to adapt and be willing to try new things and mess up and try other things, like how has trust been an integral part of you all giving yourself permission to sort of break the mold and try new things?
Yeah, that's so interesting. And that's so much of what we've worked with your team on, Michelle, right? Like the you know, building of that trust. For instance, you know, our chief giving officer, I remember her coming into my office shortly after she started with all these spreadsheets and all of these things that she had been tracking. And it was very traditional fundraiser kind of stuff, right? Numbers of calls, numbers of visits. And I said, I don't want to see that. And it really freaked her out. It did. It really freaked her out because that was the only way she'd ever been able to show that what she's doing is meaningful and if a gift doesn't come in, that she could show, well, I still did all the things I was supposed to do to get to that gift, right? But we had to build trust between each other for her to be able to relax enough to say, okay, I'm going to take my time with this donor. I'm not going to rush this. I'm going to let this relationship unfold. I'm going to do the things at the donor's pace that I need to do and focus more on telling the story and bringing people into wanting to be part of our mission, as opposed to trying to hit a number, a financial target, a call metric, whatever that may be. And we had to trust each other personally to be able to do that. And our whole team had to build trust because, as everybody knows, it's, you know, to have a real culture of philanthropy in your organization, everybody has to feel engaged and part of that process. And so everyone from our HR director to our fundraising team, we all really had to build that that base trust as a team to be able to jump into some of these innovation projects together, to know that some of them aren't going to work. And what we're going to actually be able to show as a success is just, we tried this thing and showed this is not the way. We tried this thing and we contributed to the larger dialogue around loneliness because of it. We tried this thing and it showed us we actually need to do this other thing instead. And to be able to fail together in a very public way sometimes, potentially, because a lot of what we're doing gets attention. We have to trust each other. People have to know they're not going to lose their job because of that. They have to know that they're not going to get in trouble because of that. And in fact, we encourage that kind of risk taking in the spirit of innovation and progress. And it becomes a values thing, and it really comes down to culture. And that's what we're having to try to build. And trust is at absolute core of that. We can't do any of that. Can't innovate without trust. You can't really deliver on the promise of transformation without it.
Yeah. Jennifer, I'd love to, we love to give our listeners something that they can try. Obviously, I don't think a ton of them get to have this, or well, who knows, maybe several will get phone calls or emails that they have huge transformational gifts coming their way. But you've learned so much of value that that I think other people can learn from. What would you offer to our listeners of something that, you know, that you would challenge them to give this a try?
Yeah, I think anybody can be ready for a transformational gift, right? Hopefully all of your listeners will be able to receive one. But I think one of the ways we get ready for that, and we get ourselves to a place of being able to really be in a trust-based relationship with a donor, is to start looking at the way we measure success internally now. So any fundraiser could go to their CEO or executive director and propose a different way of measuring donor relationships or progress. You know, instead of it being about how many calls you made, what if we started to try to measure stories or the ability to tell stories? How can we put some measurements around how well we're developing trusting relationships? And that's going to look different for every organization. But until we start experimenting with those things, we're never going to figure out what works. I think executive directors and CEOs, for their part, can do the same with boards. Instead of just focusing on the bottom line or year-over-year increases in fundraising, how are we doing in our strategic goals to build authentic relationships with donors? What does that look like? It doesn't look like a bottom line number, I can tell you that. So I think just trying to start to experiment, even if it's just dipping your toe in, looking at how we measure success and how we're trying to show our impact, will get everybody to a position of being able to really accept and run with a gift if it comes their way.
Yeah, I love that. Get creative. think out of the box.
Yeah. And
what's a different way to measure success? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Deepen those relationships.
Ask the question, what's the alchemy your organization could use?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much, both for your time and chatting with us, but also for your inspiration for taking a gift of dollars and turning it into some really big and creative thinking to inspire us today.
Yeah, and thank you for your work in the world. I know you're up to some really important and big things, and thank you for your time and your energy and your heart in your work.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, in the show notes, we're going to post a free resource for our listeners. And we thought a good start would be a free sheet that helps us learn how to listen from our hearts.
A great way to build trust. So we're going to put a tip sheet called 3 Powerful Ways to Listen in the show notes, and you can download that.
Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by Fundraising Leadership. We provide unique coaching and training programs that powerfully transform how you work in order to get results. Please subscribe. If you haven't already, you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're enjoying the show, you can help us continue to bring thoughtful content with a monthly or annual contribution. This supports our production costs and keeps the show ad-free. Please make a contribution today using the link in the show notes. Now, go put it into practice.